When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a scholar of the law, tested him by asking, "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" He said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest in the first commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. The whole law and the prophets depend on these two commandments." The Gospel of the Lord. I want to preach today about something very simple and specific and practical. There's a sin that I want to preach about. It's not the gravest sin, but I think it's the most serious sin that most of us don't take seriously. But first, the setup. So Jesus is, the people are continually trying to put him to the test and sort of trip him up and ask him all these questions. This legal scholar asks him, "Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law?" And the answer Jesus gives, he sums up the whole law and all the teachings of the prophets. And he says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." Now we spoke a little bit about last week about, we had the gospel of, about the coin when Jesus asked, whose image is stamped on the coin. And that kind of told us that we are made in God's image and likeness. Our neighbor is made in God's image and likeness. So in addition to loving God, we have this responsibility to love our neighbor. And Jesus even goes so far as to say, love your neighbor as yourself. The interesting thing is that this sums up not only the whole of the law, but also if you look at the Ten Commandments, which we're hopefully mostly familiar with, the Ten Commandments are broken into two tablets, right? The first tablet has to do with the commandments governing our relationship with God. The second tablet concerns the commandments governing our relationship with our neighbor, with the other. Now, what Jesus says here is the fulfillment of the law. The fulfillment of the law is that you love the Lord your God with your whole heart, your whole soul, your whole strength, and that you love your neighbor as yourself. Now, love is a transcendent thing, right? Charity is essentially, it is that. It is loving another as yourself. It's giving to somebody something that is yours. But charity presupposes justice. And so the perfection that Jesus is talking about is love, but it's building upon the foundation of justice, which is why justice is giving somebody else what they are due. And that's why the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue, is essentially centered around what we owe to others. And justice is not the fulfillment of the Christian life. Charity is, right? That's the highest value that we're working towards. But justice is a thing that if we don't fulfill the demands of justice, then love is not possible. So the Ten Commandments describe the things that we owe to others. And it's an interesting idea, by the way, that somebody could have such a right to something that you are bound to respect that right and to in some sense, we are bound to give others things that they are owed, such that if we don't give them, we're unjust. And if we're unjust towards them, we can't possibly be loving. So let's take, for instance, just as an example, the commandment that I'm the Lord your God, and you shall have no other gods before me, keep holy the Sabbath day, which in Christianity we translate into keep holy the Lord's day. In other words, come to Mass on Sunday. This is a demand of justice, right? Because we owe God worship. We owe God worship and reverence and obedience. If we do not give him worship, especially on the Lord's Day or on holy days of obligation, like this Wednesday, take note, then we are depriving him of something that we owe him. Now, we cannot possibly say that I love God when I don't give him the worship that he's owed. We can't say, I don't need to go to church. I love the Lord with all my heart, soul, and strength. Well, no, if you don't follow the commandments, if you don't give the Lord the worship that is his due, then you don't love him with all your heart, mind, and heart, soul, and mind. I keep getting that messed up. Similarly, with love of neighbor, you can't love your neighbor unless you respect essentially his rights. Your neighbor has, because your neighbor is made in God's image and likeness and has the dignity of being a son of God, he has certain rights that you're virtually absolutely bound to respect. So for instance, he has a right to his life. So if you take his life from him unjustly, you've committed a grave offense against him. You cannot say that you love him when you kill him. Similarly, he has a right to his property, such that if you take his property from him when you have no cause to do so, you've committed an injustice against him. So the foundation I'm trying to lay is that the foundation of, like, the sine qua non for charity is justice. Right? Before we can get into the question of giving somebody what's mine, we have to respect what's theirs. Okay, that's my setup. Here's where it gets simple. One of the things that we all have a right to, because we're made in God's image and likeness and have the dignity of sons and daughters of God in his image and likeness, is all of us have a right to our good name. All of us have a right to, as the Catechism calls it, honor. They say honor is the public witness paid to human dignity. And we have a right to our good name. We have a right to honor. And that right is such that if somebody violates my right to my good name without just reason, they've committed a grave injustice against me. They've deprived me of something that is my right and that is my good. Or to switch around the subject of the sentence, if I do something that deprives someone else of their good name without just and sufficient reason, I have deprived them of something that is their due, and I've committed a grave injustice against them. So the not the gravest sin, but the most serious sin that I don't think most of us take seriously is something called detraction. And the Catechism defines detraction. So there's kind of a group of sins that we could lump together under the kind of innocuous term of gossip. But I want to enumerate some of them for you, right? So there's the fairly harmless gossip, which is just, you know, we sit around and say, how's so-and-so doing? You know, did you hear what happened at the, you know, you're not really saying anything bad about anybody. You're not really saying anything harmful. I would say we're not dealing with serious sin there. Where we start to deal with serious sin is what the church calls detraction. And detraction is when we, without objectively valid reason, reveal the faults and sins of others to someone who does not know them. And the reason the church, what's interesting, by the way, is that the section of the Catechism the church treats of detraction under is the commandment to not bear false witness against your neighbor. This is interesting, right? Because for the sin of detraction, we are not talking about anything that's not true, right? If you tell lies about your neighbor, we call that something else. We call that calumny. Detraction is actually when you reveal the real faults and sins of your neighbor that you're aware of to somebody who doesn't know it without sufficient cause. Which means one of the justifications that I often hear for detraction is, you know, people will say, well, it's not wrong for me to say it because it's true. Well, not according to the church. And what's even more confusing is even if what you're saying is true, in other words, you come to know something bad about your neighbor and you tell it to somebody, the church puts that under the commandment against lying, under the commandment against bearing false witness. The reason being, if we damage somebody's reputation, if we dishonor them, we are, in a sense, marring in the eyes of another their image and their dignity as a son and daughter of God. And in that sense, even if the fact that we're revealing is true, we're essentially leading somebody to have a false view of that person. We're leading them to think less of that person. So, you know, just to allow reason in here, the church does say without objectively valid reason. There are occasions in which we need to reveal the faults and sins of others, but they're relatively few. Right? It could be a situation where that person is a danger to themselves or others, or they've committed a great crime that needs to be reported or something like that. Maybe for their own good, somebody needs to know something. Like, maybe you find out something about like a dangerous behavior that a teenager is engaging in and you need to tell his parents, right? There are situations in which there are objectively valid and serious reasons to prudently reveal the faults and sins of another to someone who doesn't know them. But those circumstances are relatively few. And so I don't know that I need to explain this anymore. I think the thought is clear, right? I would like to propose a more positive approach to this, by the way. So, you know, probably many of us, myself included, are sitting here thinking, wow, I've actually committed this sin quite a lot in my life, and wow, I never thought about how serious it was. But there's a way that we can not only fulfill the demands of justice, but then also start to work towards charity, start to work towards loving our neighbor as ourself. And some of the things that I would recommend are, have the courage to stop gossip when it's happening. That's one thing. And it does take courage. Like you want to feel embarrassed, you want to feel hung out, you want people to give you the cold shoulder or act like you're being holier than thou. Tell them, look, I'm not comfortable with the conversation that we're having here. We're talking about these other people and we're saying things about them that don't need to be said, and I want to walk away from it, right? Or somebody tells you, hey, I've got some gossip I want to share with you. If you want to make yourself and them uncomfortable, say, no, thank you. Unless it's something that I need to know, I don't want to hear it. The other thing is, if you come across somehow knowledge, any way that you get it, if you come across knowledge of somebody's faults and sins, rather than looking for opportunities to be a conduit of that information, rather than saying like, ooh, I've got a hot piece of gossip that my friends are gonna love to hear, consider yourself the guardian of this person's reputation. However it is that you came to be, maybe you witnessed something, maybe that person themselves told you something, which actually means you have even more of a responsibility to respect their confidence. However it is you came to know about this person's faults and failings, consider yourself the guardian of their reputation. And if you fail to guard this thing that you know, then you failed to love your neighbor. You failed to protect that person. Lastly, there's another, so calumny we don't need to go into because I think that's fairly obvious. If you're telling lies about another person, that's bad on all sorts of levels. There's the catechism also talks about rash judgment, which is when we too readily believe bad things about another, or too readily take the worst interpretation of somebody's actions or words. So we also want to avoid that. And this is all under the realm of giving the other the dignity, the honor that they have a right to because they're made in God's image and likeness. So if somebody does something that you don't quite understand what they've done, what the church calls us to is to not jump to the worst possible conclusion. Actually start with the best possible explanation for their actions. Or if somebody breaks this commandment against detraction and gossip and tells you something bad about another person, don't be so ready to believe it. I think the world would be a much better place if every time we heard something bad about somebody else, we said, I don't know if that's true, and I'm just going to dismiss it from my mind. But sometimes, because it's kind of like Schadenfreude, right? Sometimes we want to believe the bad things about the others, and so we're too ready to enter into it. Now, the one last thing that I want to talk about is something that St. Thomas Aquinas calls talebearing, and it's of all the sins that we could put under the realm of gossip, it's the worst one. This is the nastiest, right? And what talebearing is when we try to deprive another of friendship through what we reveal about them. So what this would look like is, let's say that I really dislike Father Steve. I'm just sick of it. I love Father Steve, by the way, so this is entirely hypothetical. Let's say I'm totally sick of Father Steve. I dislike him so much that my blood starts to boil when the name of Father Steve comes up. And then when I meet somebody who says, hey, isn't Father Steve a great guy? I just can't handle it. And so I tell them all the reasons why I think Father Steve's not a great guy, right? What am I doing there? It's possible that I'm just venting. Remember, give me the benefit of the doubt. But it's also possible that I dislike Father Steve so much that I want you to dislike Father Steve. And so since you think he's such a good guy, well, I'm going to tell you all the things you don't know. So not only am I committing the sin of detraction, I'm actually trying to get you not to like Father Steve, which is a very direct attack against his dignity. And because St. Thomas Aquinas says one of the greatest needs we have to thrive is friendship, you're also attacking the good of friendship against him. And so these are various sins, brother. Or these are very serious sins, brothers and sisters. Now, I just realized that I didn't like plan an uplifting end to the. So, you know, don't gossip.